Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
I started thinking what a terrible life it must be to have every week just start out so poorly as it does for Joe Biden as president of the United States. And then I started thinking about the issues he's had with his health, the problems that he has in front of the camera, the chaos that must be taking place behind the scenes, the COVID in the West Wing, the sinking poll numbers that he's given every single day. And I just keep coming up with, it just has to stink to be Joe Biden. And he just refuses to do anything about it because almost all of his problems are fixable. They're just so fixable. And he just won't do it. They announced they're closing another pipeline. His polls continue to sink. He's had some health issues. They've got problems with, as I mentioned, COVID in the West Wing. And then on Monday, this story is not getting, I feel like a lot of times here on the podcast, we talk about things that aren't getting talked about enough elsewhere. This is the big one. I mean, this is the big one. If there really right now is a signature thing that Joe Biden has done in 10 months as president, it is putting a mandate out that requires businesses of 100 employees or more to terminate or pay fines for having retaining employees that are not vaccinated. If there is one big signature issue, and I don't look at Afghanistan as an issue, that it certainly was, that was him. That was a complete boondoggle and a disaster and a tragedy, all of those things. I'm talking about like legislating things. Like, here's the American people, here's what we're doing, we're going to try to pass this, we're going to do this, whatever. He just goes with his mandate. And this is going to happen miraculously. You can have 99 employees, but not 100. Because I don't know why. It's not been explained. We certainly don't know why at this point with the vaccine available and the numbers down in so many places why they're even doing any of this, other than control, which is what they're all about. Biden gets hammered by the 5th District Court of Appeals on Monday. The 5th District is like Mississippi, Louisiana, and Eastern Texas. It's the Gulf states. It's along the Gulf Coast. The 5th District doesn't even go into detail as why they put a stay out on this mandate. The mandate's been pushed back to January 4th. The mandate says, and we've heard a lot about Southwest Airlines and other big companies, the mandate says if you have more than 100 employees, if they're not vaccinated, they can't work for you. If they do work for you, we're going to fine the living daylights out of you. This can't be America. That cannot be constitutional. That is absolutely impossible that this is legal. The 5th District Court in the Gulf states said, look, they give a very simple one and a half, two sentence description of what this is, that it's problematic and likely unconstitutional. They don't even go into the merits of the argument. Why? Because it's so obvious to people, even like me and you, who are not lawyers. We're not legal scholars. We're not lawyers, but we understand what the Constitution says. And we understand what presidential powers are. And if Congress wants to pass legislation, Senate approves it, and the president signs it, that there is a law in the country that no business with over 100 employees can have any employees working for them unless they're vaccinated for COVID-19, then fine, go pass that law. Let's see you pass the law. The Constitution says you can pass things like that. I think pretty much anything can be passed if it goes through Congress, the Senate, and the president, but you can't do it as a mandate. Again, mandates are not laws. So it gets struck down. The Biden administration had until 5 o'clock on Monday to respond, and they did. And they did not respond on merits of the case. They did not argue that what they're doing is constitutional. They argued a technicality, that there's a loophole somewhere. Of course there is. That says they can do this in an emergency situation because of OSHA, the Occupational Safety Hazard Administration, that they'll work it through OSHA. It's a complicated legal needle threading that they're trying to get done that's not going to work in places like the 5th District. Of course, they want to send this to New York's district court. They want to get it to a liberal court, a liberal judge. It doesn't matter. It's going to wind up to the Supreme Court. I don't know why we can't just fast track it. There are certain things in this country that there needs to be a faster process to just go to the Supreme Court. This is an easy decision for the Supreme Court. These mandates are not constitutional. They cannot do this. You cannot. You're not the king. You're not the king of America. This is not a dictatorship. You cannot do this to the American people, and you can't do it to private companies and public companies. I don't think anybody questions this. I don't know anybody that thinks this is or should be legal. I don't know anybody that thinks it is or should be legal. Not one person. It's a ridiculous overreach. Everybody knows it. So he's in a shambles there. It's already been pushed back to January. People keep talking about everybody losing their jobs, whatever. I know, and we've talked about 360 Document Solutions, and my friend Mark Lindquist, he's looking for people that are afraid they're going to lose their jobs because of this mandate. I've exchanged some emails with listeners and made a couple of phone calls and talked with people that work for railroads or other big companies that think they're going to lose their jobs. And I said, listen, I'm not in your shoes, so I'm not trying to talk you off the ledge and tell you you're wrong. I just don't see how they can implement this. I don't know how this can possibly be legal. Now, I'm not in a position where I'm going to lose my job because of this mandate. So far be it from me to tell someone who's feeling that pressure right now, who's really feeling that, you know, to be optimistic that it's not going to happen to them. I can't convince you of that. I understand that. You're in your situation. And that's very important. And that's everything to you. And I cannot relate to that or walk in your shoes because I am not in that spot. But sitting back and as an objective observer, I've thought all along, there's no way this mandate is going to be in force. There's no way. And these companies have to know this now. These companies are getting emboldened. They've all filed suit. States have filed suit. Everybody's filing suit against the Biden mandate, and we're finding out now the farther it goes in court, the less merit it has. Maybe it never goes to the Supreme Court. I think Joe Biden should drop it is what he should do. I think right after the holidays, he should just say, it's out. It's over. The fight's over. I'm not going to do that. You know, there's some thinking that all he was doing all along was just trying to get more people to take the jab, which doesn't seem to be working out great for everyone. Gavin Newsom is the governor of California. Gavin Newsom has not been in public in 12 days. He was supposed to go to the climate summit. He didn't go. He's disappeared. There are reports everywhere, not confirmed by Gavin Newsom and his people. There are reports everywhere that he has had a very severe reaction to his vaccination, that he got the booster and it hasn't gone well, that his face became paralyzed. There are some syndromes associated with vaccinations. We've got reports all over the country of this happening to thousands of people. These are not unique cases. People with vaccine reactions, adverse reactions to the COVID vaccine in less than a year, okay, are a greater number than reactions to all vaccines in the United States in the last 15 years combined. This vaccine is not safe. There are all kinds of bad reactions. Is the risk worth it? That's for the individual to decide. If you're at risk for COVID-19, you have lung cancer, you're older, some sort of diabetes, comorbidity is what we call them. If you have one of those things, yeah, the risk of getting sick from the vaccine is well worth taking the vaccine. We have some new neighbors, and the neighbor lady was in our driveway yesterday, and I don't know her from Adam, and she's got two cute little girls, and she was bragging that she got her little girl, who appears to be 6 or 7 years old. They've approved this shot now. Little kids. She was very excited that she jabbed her kid. Bit my lip with the new neighbor. They have no idea who I am or what I do. Zero. No clue. They're from out of state. They've been here a while, but they're not the kind of people, I don't think, that would have listened to sports radio or paid attention or whatever, which is fine. I have no issue with that whatsoever. I don't expect people to know who I am or what I do. But if those conversations in my driveway continue, I am not going to bite my lip. They'll eventually know who lives next door and what I'm all about. But these people are just, I just don't even understand it. Where is Gavin Newsom? Is he sick from the vax? A lot of people think he's sick from the vax. And you got to admit, I don't wish it upon anyone. But you'd have to see the irony in that, wouldn't you? And why does California have almost three times the COVID rate right now of Florida? If they've done so great locking everything down, why is California filled with three times as much COVID as Florida right now? It's all crumbling on these people. We've seen the polls. Americans are not stupid. He's not a serious president. Everybody knows it. He did a local interview with an Ohio TV station and was asked about his really crappy poll numbers that we talked about on Monday. And Biden said, I didn't run on the polls. He said, yeah, I know COVID's got people scared. I know it sucks to go to school because the kids have to wear masks. I know people don't like the mandates, and I know gas prices are high. I know we have a supply chain problem. But I didn't run on polling. What is wrong with this man? That would have been nice to say during the campaign. I'm running to be president to do what I want to do. I don't care what you want. Just say it up front. Of course you ran on polling. That's all you did. You polled every issue. You went out and lied to the American public about what you were going to do and what you were going to be. You were just going to be this status quo guy that isn't going to do much. We're going to get rid of Trump the ogre. Just let things go. Because everybody liked how it was going, except for COVID. Everybody liked how things were going. Everything was going great. Gas prices were cheap. We didn't have inflation. None of these things. So no, you didn't run on polling? Of course you did. It's exactly what you did. Then you took over and you forgot about what the American people want. And you forgot about the needs and the desires of the American people because you're crazed and the people that control you are crazed with controlling all of us. That's all they want to do is control. They want a socialist country. They want to run everything. They want to tell you what's good for you and bad for you. His problems are so fixable, every single one of them. Drop the COVID restrictions. Keep encouraging people to get the shot. Knock yourself out. Talk about the Pfizer pill or whatever that's coming out for COVID. Talk about all of the, you know, the medicines that we have now that work for COVID. Let's talk about the ivermectin studies in other countries, and maybe this is the way. If you get COVID, go get ivermectin. They won't do it. They don't want to fix COVID. They don't want to fix schools. They want to kowtow to the teachers. The teachers don't want to teach. They love staying at home. The teachers loved staying at home. They want more. What's the word they came up with? Skimpflation? Skimpflation is the new term. Have you heard this term? Skimpflation. Skimpflation is every business everywhere or every person everywhere skimping, doing less in the name of COVID. It's obvious. It's the opposite of inflation. Inflation is more. Skimpflation is you're skimping. You're doing less. It's everywhere. It's everywhere from every restaurant you've been to that doesn't have menus now. You got to scan it with your phone. Everything's changed. Everybody's skimping. Everything's done it. The teachers have done it too. And they don't want to go back. They don't want to go back to how hard it was. This is great. They've got complete control of these kids. The little munchkins are sitting there scared to death wearing their masks. There's no talking back with a mask on. Just sit there and obey. And I'll teach you about critical race theory. You keep your mouth shut and your mask over your nose and your face. And I'm going to tell you how it is. It's pathetic. Gas prices? Easy. Open the pipeline. It's just sitting there. You could cut gas prices $1 a gallon in 3 weeks if he wanted. He loses on all these issues. All these issues. Doesn't seem to care. And we don't know where Gavin Newsom is. That's going to be a really, really interesting one. I want to know what happened to Gavin Newsom. I don't know. There are reports. I want to know. And I think that should be a 20 times bigger story than Aaron Rodgers. That should be tied to the Aaron Rodgers story. How is it that Stephen A. Smith and Terry Bradshaw come out on Sunday and Monday and call Aaron Rodgers a liar? What did he lie about? He didn't say he took the shot. He said he was immunized. He did the immunotherapy. It was several months of treatment to boost his antibodies. And he says, I got immunized. I've been tested. I have the antibodies. How did he lie? They didn't ask him what he did. They didn't ask him specifically, did you get the shot? And he said, yes, I got the shot. He never said that. That would be a lie. Besides, it's nobody's business, even if he did lie about his own personal health care. It's nobody's business. Tyrann Mathieu got the jab and still got COVID. The left, these people are going crazy saying, look, he was unvaccinated. His therapy didn't work. Well, the vaccine doesn't work. There's all kinds of vaccinated people getting COVID. This whole thing is ridiculous. The Gavin Newsom story needs to be the story. They are going to kill that story. Boy, it is incumbent on everyone on the left that Gavin Newsom, if he had a negative reaction to his booster shot, they cannot let that story out. They have to lie, and defend whatever it was that he did. He's been gone for 12 days. There are reports that half of his face was paralyzed. And he couldn't go anywhere. I don't know. I'm not telling you I know. I'm reading these reports just like everyone else, and it's amazing what they do. It is amazing the lengths they will go to keep this scam going. In Northern Ireland, Van Morrison, the music star, the rock star, it's a fabulous night for a moon dance. You know that song, right? Van Morrison from Northern Ireland is being sued by the Minister of Health because he has recorded songs that are anti-lockdown. Not anti-vaccine, not anti-mask, anti-lockdown. He's been outspoken that lockdowns are not right. We shouldn't be locking people down. We should have more freedoms than that. The Minister of Health is suing Van Morrison over this. This world is upside down, man. This world is all jacked up. My garage floor will not be all jacked up when Amazing Garage Floors is done. They're coming later this month. I had they also work with some associates that can help you with all kinds of systems on your wall to hang your tools and whatnot. So I'm going to do that as well. That's Banner Garage that does that. If you know those folks over at Banner Garage, tell them we said hello. They're going to be hanging all kinds of really cool racks and stuff on my wall that I can hang my tools and keep them up off the floor and out of the way. Amazing Garage Floors will do the floor. Banner's going to do the walls. So shout out to Ed and his people over at Banner Wall. That's what's great about all of these sponsors that I have. Like John doesn't, Hutch, my guy that does Amazing Garage Floors, doesn't really do the wall systems. He says, I got a guy for that. And he's just like Hutch. He's just like us. We're all the same. It's our own private club here at KKHI. You want to work with people like you, that think like you, that run their business like you would? John Hutchins is your guy. He's a great veteran, great patriot. AmazingGarageFloors.net, 901-7139. Oh, and these guys at Merriam Body Shop are just blowing up my inbox. I don't know how else to describe it. He set out, Brad told me when he bought the business, he said, I'm going to turn it into the Quick Trip or the Chick-fil-A of body shops. People are going to walk away from my body shop and go, oh my God, I can't believe how good those guys are and how much they care. And now my inbox is just filling up with emails from you that are reflecting that. From my friend Tyler Harry, who got his truck fixed there, couldn't believe it. He darn near crying when he called me. He was so excited with what his truck became because they detailed it for him after they were done doing the body work. It's what they do. They'll fix one little door ding, or they'll detail your car, or they'll fix your total wreck. MerriamBodyShop.com. It's on Merriam Drive, just off I-35 and Johnson Drive. State Farm preferred, full collision repair. And don't forget, the newcarimage.com as well. That's the detailing branch of Merriam Body Shop. They can do that in Kansas City or Lawrence. Complete custom detailing, better than new. I know a lot of you love your cars. The only way I know how to say this is they like your car more than you do. They do. They love your car more than you do. Go check them out at Merriam Body Shop. Well, last year we talked about Shawnee Mission North, my high school, changing the name from Indians to Bison, and how Bison, to me, represents the worst of what white people did to Indians because we slaughtered all the Bison, which basically starved the Indians. There was no real war that took place against the Indians. Yes, there was slaughter of them. We took their land. We did a lot of horrible things. It happened. It wasn't you. It wasn't me. It happened. But the worst thing we did to the Native Americans, to the indigenous people, the worst thing we did was kill off the Bison. It was the worst thing we did. So we'll just shove that right in their face by renaming Shawnee Mission North. This is how idiotic these people are at the Shawnee Mission School District. And at the time, I said, well, then everything's got to go. The Shawnee Mission, the Shawnee Indian Mission, was thought to be racist. It was founded by a slave owner or slave owners. They were preachers. They were Christians. And they wanted to convert the indigenous people to Christianity. They built schools. They were trying to teach them the ways of the white man and Christianity. So if that's what we did, and those people were slave owners, Shawnee Mission Parkway has to be renamed. The Shawnee Mission School District has to be renamed. Everything has to be renamed. And I was saying this as a matter of, if you're in a debate, what I was arguing makes a lot of sense. If you're changing the name Indian, everything's got to go. Everything's named after Native Americans where we live. Everything. Many Native Americans believe, or indigenous people believe, it's an honor that it's been named after us. But certainly not the Shawnee Indian Mission, which was to convert Indians into white people and Christians. Certainly we can't celebrate Shawnee Mission. That has to go. And so I do this because I like to poke these lefties with a stick. And I wrote those letters to the Star, and they didn't respond to any of them. The editors didn't. No, nobody responded to any of my letters to the editor, to the Star, of renaming all this other stuff. Well, I'll be damned. It's only been a few months. And now, something called the Johnson County Charter Commission, which meets every 10 years, has sent a memo over to the county asking what the procedure would be to rename Johnson County. Because Thomas Johnson helped found and begin the Shawnee Indian Mission. He was a slave owner. We'll not care that Thomas Johnson stopped being a slave owner and supported the Union before the Civil War started and was murdered on his front lawn right here in Shawnee Mission in 1865. Now, we'll forget all that, that the man changed, that he was a Christian, that he was a pastor, and that he wanted to try to do good things. Maybe was misguided by being a slave owner, certainly. So, yes, we recognize all of that. What is the solution they've come up with? Well, the Kansas City Star's editorial board clearly is somehow behind this. They want to get, they want to keep Johnson County, and here's why. They just want it renamed after Luella Johnson, who in 1890 sued the Olathe School Board to attend a white school, and she was successful. So they want Johnson County to be renamed. They just want to say it's in honor of Luella Johnson, not Thomas Johnson. The reason the Star wants that is twofold. They like to point out Luella Johnson, but mainly they're beginning to figure out when they've gone too far or what is too much. Changing Johnson County to Keatsman County would drive people crazy. There would be a revolt. People don't want that. They don't want to rename the county something completely different. So what they're saying is, you know, this is, again, this is them just trying to virtue signal and look good without any real substance. Real substance would be to find the person who's been most instrumental in what Johnson County is today and naming it after them. That would be real substance. This is not real substance. This is virtue signaling. It's fake. It's, oh, Luella Johnson was great, and I assume she was. She won her case against the school board. That's great. That's a landmark decision. I'm all for it. Progress as promised. So we'll keep the name the same. We're just going to say it's named after Luella now and not Thomas. That's just so, so weird. These people are weird. I mean, at their core, they're just strange. The things that they think of and come up with. The Kansas City Star has an editorial. They want to find another Johnson. Keep it Johnson County, but take this Thomas Johnson off and find us another Johnson. Wow. You can't make that stuff up. Really. I mean, they are something else. If it goes to that, I mean, how does Shawnee Mission stand? How does the Shawnee Mission School District change the name Indians, but not Shawnee Mission School District? Maybe they should be the Johnson County School District or something of that nature. Or the Rolling Prairie School District, or something. I don't know what. But not Shawnee Mission. I mean, literally, the argument is made that that's the worst thing that we did here in Kansas City, in this area, was we tried to convert indigenous people into white people and make them Christian and teach them our ways. Now, there was some good stuff in these schools, in the Indian Mission. We taught them how to farm more efficiently. They weren't great at it. They'll try to tell you that Thanksgiving was about the indigenous people and how they were so good at, you know, everything that they did. No, they were starving. They lived off buffalo. They lived off bison. That's what they lived off of. Did they have some corn? Yes. They were able to farm some things. But it didn't take very long. We weren't here just a few decades and had figured out all kinds of advanced farming methods that we were teaching to the indigenous people. That's kind of what the Shawnee Indian Mission was. It was an ag school. It was also a religious school. It was a religious agriculture school. We're going to try to help you be more sustainable. It's just crazy what these people do. Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs just makes it easy. Every customer that goes there says, we just make it easy at Roberts Robinson, and they do. Tim Trader, Mike Robinson, they're on the showroom floor every day. Check out their inventory online at robertsrobinson.com. They got a great selection of Buick SUVs. Experience the new Buick. GMC trucks, we are professional grade. And of course, Chevrolet, find new roads, which I've done with my new Chevy Blazer. I saw a black Blazer RS yesterday with black wheels, which is what I was originally going to get. And I get this pewter metallic, which is more of a gray than a pewter. And I'm so glad I did. The black on black looked great. But I see a lot of black on black cars. Black paint, black wheels. And so I'm really glad that I made the decision. My previous car was white with black wheels. I like black wheels. And now this one is kind of a gray with black wheels, and I love it. Roberts Robinson built it for me. They just got on the computer with me. We ordered it from the factory. A few weeks later, it was at the dealership. I picked it up, and it was that easy. And they'll do it for you at Roberts Robinson. They'll also work on your car and do any service that you need. They'll pick your car up, service it, and deliver it back to you at Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, in Excelsior Springs. You don't have to live in Excelsior. You can live anywhere and get a car from Roberts Robinson. They'll get it to you. You can live out of state and order your car from Roberts Robinson. Support somebody conservative that's running a great business. It's a great small-town dealership with small-town prices, and they're awesome. BeStock.net, celebrating Black Friday all month, the entire month of November, at 14680 South Flaming Road. It's BeStock.net. Samsung 65-inch TVs, $450. You want a 70-inch TV? Just ramp it on up, $50 more. $499 for a 70-inch Samsung TU7000. Great stuff at BeStock.net, just in time for the holidays and football playoffs, 14680 South Flaming Road. Or are you curious what's in the infrastructure bill? I am. Here's one thing we've learned. There's a couple of things in here you need to know about. The first is there's going to be some sort of legislation in this thing that by 2026, every new car that rolls off the line and is sold in America has to be able to detect alcohol in the driver. Your car will now spy on you if you go to dinner and have two glasses of wine and rate you on whether or not you can drive home. Can you imagine how hard it's going to be to get an Uber if every single car detects alcohol? Look, drunk driving's a problem. I'm not going to sit here and say it's not. It causes a lot of death, a lot of mayhem to innocent people that don't drink. But this whole thought of just the government implementing more spying on everything we're doing is unnerving to me. This is so liberal. And I'm torn here because it may be the right thing to do, but it's wrong. It's un-American. You can have the best of intentions and something is unconstitutional and un-American. And I don't know how that doesn't infringe on your rights. Now, I guess you can argue in this case that you don't have the right to drive a car, that the government decides whether or not you can operate a vehicle. I think it would hold up in court, whereas, you know, taking a shot can't. They can't make you take medicine to live your life. That's totally different than the privilege. You know, your healthcare is your right. You're protected. Your speech is protected. What you put in your body is your right. Whether you drive a car is a privilege. But these are the people that argue that healthcare is a right and not a privilege. Healthcare is a privilege. Having healthcare insurance is a privilege. It's not a right. It's not in the Constitution. It's not a right. So these are areas of law that are very interesting, but by 2026, they want to make all cars detect whether or not you've been drinking alcohol. They also have a tax in single-family homes in the infrastructure bill, and you ask yourself, why would Democrats attack single-family homes? Well, the majority of single-family homes in this country are Republican. The majority. Democrats live in stacked housing. They live in high-rises. They live in urban cores. They live in big apartment buildings, condominiums, things like that. They don't live in single-family homes. The overwhelming concentration of liberals are in either housing developments that are high-rises, apartment complexes, the projects, government housing, you name it. Any place that, you know, 20 people to 2,000 people live in one building, those are heavy liberal Democrat buildings. They want more of that. The infrastructure bill is loaded with a quote-unquote affordable housing. To me, it's just stacked housing. It's throwing people on top of each other and knowing they'll be Democrats and saying, here's where we get our votes. This is what the Overland Park mayor's race was about. Mike Zinnege did not want more, quote, affordable housing in Overland Park. They're building six, eight-story apartment buildings with hundreds of residents in each one. And what's happening? Kids are moving out of the city or whatever. Liberals are moving and they're going into those apartments and saying, okay, I'll live a little bit outside the urban core, but right here. And then they get to Overland Park and they vote liberal. And imagine you have to build a whole neighborhood like the one I live in to equal one apartment building. Now, we've got almost an acre of land here on this lot that we built our house on. It's a big, beautiful wooded development. We can't see our neighbors from our house. We're secluded. It's nice. It's very nice. This is the way we like to live. That's why we live in the middle of the country. There's land. There's space. But we're just two votes. If you took the land that I just bought and the house next door, you could build an apartment building that would put how many votes in here? Hundreds of votes on this land, and that's what they're doing. And the people that move into those places generally vote for Democrats. So that's what's in your infrastructure bill. You're going to like it. You're going to love it. I promise. All right, let's move on to sports. And I got a clip to play for you. This is just too good to not play. It doesn't need a lot of setup. It's Peter Vermes, manager of Sporting Kansas City. They lost 1-0 to Salt Lake on Sunday. In doing so, they were not the one seed in the Western Conference. They became the 3 seed. The playoffs are on. They start now. There was a brutal call missed in the game. Handball is the most offensive thing you can do in soccer. If you use your hand to alter the ball, that is the number one most egregious penalty in soccer. Sporting's on a run. They're getting ready to score. And the Salt Lake defender reaches out, taps the ball with his hand, knocks it away. Ball gets loose. Sporting doesn't get to score. It should have been a penalty kick. Immediately, it is the most egregious penalty. If the official's out of place and misses it, everybody saw it, and everybody saw the replay. They have something called VAR, Video Assisted Review, VAR. They don't even go to it. They don't even look at the review. Everybody in the stadium can see it. Peter Vermes saw it live. The official missed it. It happens. He's a human. Maybe he was out of position. Maybe he just didn't see it. But it was so obvious, you can't even believe it. I mean, this was the most obvious missed call you've ever seen in soccer in your life. This is not whining about officiating. There's a review process in place to find these things when they happen, and they didn't do that. Sporting loses 1-0. Obviously, if they get the penalty kick, they're gonna score on the PK. Odds are it's at least going to be a 1-1 draw. It changes Sporting seeding, and get this, Salt Lake made the playoffs, and LA got knocked out of the playoffs on the missed call. Now, Peter Vermes thinks there's a lot of reasons why Sporting is on the short end of a lot of these calls, and he goes into that. This is not a short clip, but you're going to love this. This is 4 or 5 minutes long. Peter Vermes talking about how they got it's a bigger picture than a soccer match. Forget the soccer component for a second. Forget Sporting Kansas City if you're not a fan. Peter Vermes is the smartest guy and like the greatest leader you've ever met. This guy's a tremendous coach. All right? He goes into a diatribe here on how great the NFL is and how crappy MLS is, and ask yourself why you don't watch more soccer, the problems that you have with the sport and MLS in particular, as you listen to Peter Vermes. This is unbelievable.
Because the travesty that happened here tonight also affects other teams as well. Because they're expecting the game to be played correctly. And that is always incumbent upon the officials. Yes, the players, the coaches, the staffs all have to do their part. But at the end of the day, you have two competitors that come against each other to play. And then what you have is you have an impartial group that is to come and referee the game. Okay? And so congratulations to Salt Lake. But what is incredibly disappointing, what is a stab to the heart of every single person that is associated to our club and to all the clubs that are competing, because this result affects them as well. And so Salt Lake gets in, LA gets knocked out. LA is now sitting on the outside because of the call as well. And that is incredibly, incredibly unprofessional. The fact that you have VAR, the fact that you have replays, the fact that you sit upstairs and you look at replays and you have all the time in the world to make that decision. He could have went a couple times because the ball didn't even go out of bounds. He could have blew the whistle at any time. But VAR not coming back and talking about a clear and obvious mistake, that's not a handball. If that is the case, if that's what they believe, then and I'm never one to ever ask for anybody's job or anything, then I would say that all of those guys are not able to referee, to look at VAR, to do whatever at this level. It has impacted everything. It is the black mark on this league. It is an example of why we lose so many people to watch this game year in and year out, game in and game out, because we do not get it right. It's what I appreciate about the NFL all the time. I'm a big fan of the NFL because I think that they get it right. And when they make a mistake, they are professional enough to stand up and say they did, and they put in processes afterwards to make sure it doesn't happen again. And that's why they are the best league in our country. The fact that we miss that out there in any game, let alone with the magnitude of this game, is incredibly, incredibly disappointing to someone who's been in the league since 1996. See, we've come so far, but then we haven't come far enough because we can't even get that right and we have replay. I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed today to be a part of the league when you can't do that. Now, if you want to say that it's he didn't see it, I can't believe that. So then I start to think other things. Why? Why can you not make that call? It affects us. It affects LA. It affects other teams in the league. And the fact that that does not get called, you now have to start asking yourself questions. Why? Why? Because there's anybody in this place, whether it's out here, or anybody in the stadium, or anybody watching the game, they're watching a replay on TV. How clear is it for the guy to just go like this, to hand the ball? That is me touching that bottle. That's what it is. It's nothing else. You see the ball move. You see everything. I looked at one video on the field. I came in and watched the live video. I saw it there. Okay, maybe the referee's not in a good spot. I can understand that. That's why there is VAR. And the fact that it fails in this environment, and by the way, for us, I asked the question because I believe on a consistent basis that this club ends up being on the wrong side of any of those calls. It happens all the time. All the time. We have players in this league that dive all the time that get calls. We have players on our team that stand up and try to fight through things and try to play the game right. They don't get calls. We are always on the wrong side. I can shoot back to last year. We played Dallas in Dallas. There's a goal we score. They actually call a foul against us in coming out. The VAR person is watching that game, misses it there as well. Guess what we get out of that? Nothing. Dallas gets the benefit. Afterwards, they say, oh, yeah, it was a mistake. It was a mistake. But it gets no benefit to us now. And now if they come out after this and say they made a mistake, what does it do for us? What does it do for the other teams that have been impacted? Zero. This is unacceptable to me. This is unacceptable to me. I think it is a travesty. I think it's a travesty in sports. And I think it's the most difficult thing that I am going to have to deal with now leading up to whatever, when we play, based on the fact that between the team, the staff, I'm going to have to figure out, because of how devastated they are, of all the work that they've done over the course of the year, it doesn't matter if it comes down to the last play of the game. It's one thing if you made the mistake. It's another thing when it was clear and obvious and you cannot make the call when you even have replay on TV. It's unacceptable. And something has to change. Something has to change on the way they do it. And something has to change in the way that they look at this club. Because this club has been a model citizen since our ownership took over. And we continue to get somehow this small market treatment, which, you know what, frankly, I am tired of.
All right, there's Peter Vermes, and that is absolutely as good as it gets. I love this guy. I can't tell you how big a fan I am of Peter Vermes and the way they operate at Sporting Kansas City, and I agree with him. I wish the sport were more fair, a little more predictable and entertaining. I have complete and utter respect for the athletes, their skill level, everything about them. But the game to me is played too much in the center of the pitch and not enough near the goals. There's not enough action in it for me. There is artistry in handling the ball, certainly. But if the equivalent of this is like, you know, would you like to watch your basketball team, you know, beat the press every time because you have guys that can really handle the ball and then only have, or maybe not get down there in time to shoot. And it just gets turned over. I mean, there's a lot of that in soccer. There's a lot of things I would do to make soccer more entertaining. But certainly people see this and they don't like it. And if you have a video system, it, you know, I always say video is in place just for the egregious stuff, not for the close stuff. This was egregious. This was not close. I respect Peter for me. He's going to get fined big time. And it changed a lot. Kansas City fell to the number 3 seed. L.A. didn't make the playoffs, and Salt Lake got in because of this missed call. It was a brutal miss, and I say good for Peter Vermees for bringing it up and standing his ground on that. I'll root for him. I'll watch him in the playoffs, and I will root for him. They're very good, and they know what they're doing, and they run that thing like a conservative. I know their fan base is liberal. Soccer fans generally are liberal. It's a world sport. They want to be a world team. Most of the people in the stands are liberals. That team is run by conservatives, and it is a conservative-run organization, and they are a well-oiled machine. Bill Self is a good conservative in a liberal bastion of Lawrence, Kansas. His team starts tonight against Michigan State. It's the Champions Classic. KU is ranked 3rd in the country. Michigan State is unranked for the first time in 10 years. 10 years ago when Michigan State was unranked, they went on to win the Big Ten and become a number 1 seed in the tournament. Look, Sparty was no good last year. They were 15-13, 9-11 in the Big Ten. They didn't, you know, if you say one thing about Michigan State, if you had one defining quality about Michigan State that they do better than anybody else always, it's offensive rebounding. That they can look ugly on offense, miss shots, but they will rebound and get putbacks like nobody's business. And they weren't very good at it last year. And their defense fell off. Sparty's going to roll out there tonight with a chip on their shoulder because they're not ranked. But they're not that good. Kansas is stacked. They bring everybody back from an outstanding team, and now they add Remy Martin to the rotation. This guard is something else. He was the Pac-12 Player of the Year. He's another one of these, you know, 34-year-old guys that's been in college for 15 years and is bouncing around and getting his extra year at Kansas. So it's one and done. He's going to run the offense. Bill Self's been mad at him because he's shooting too much and not passing enough. Well, he'll coach that right out of him. Bill Self's a great coach. He'll coach that right out of him. I mean, unless KU just isn't ready for the season, which doesn't sound right to me, unless they're just not ready, this should be a boat race. I mean, number 3 versus unranked, this is like a KU-K State game. I know it's Sparty. I know it's Izzo. I know it's early. Weird things can happen. But I don't know what Michigan State has added that improves them from the rummies they were last year. They're not overly big. They're going to go with a big, plodding, slow lineup that's going to try to rebound on offense. Their game plan is, we're going to miss shots against Kansas. Let's try to rebound it and put it back. That's their game plan tonight. It's got my attention. I'll watch. I think Kansas rolls. I think it's hard. It's hard to commit to that because it's the first game and you just don't know. But Kansas doesn't come out flat in these things. They're ready to play. This is big time. Madison Square Garden, Duke and Kentucky play after that. It's Coach K's final year at Duke. So some college basketball drama tonight that you'll be able to check out. I like Kansas in this. My prediction for years was, I predicted Kansas would win the Big 12. And I said, listen, until proven otherwise, they're just the team. Well, Kansas was really good last year, but Baylor won the national title. Texas got a new coach, and the guy can really coach. I don't know enough about those squads to say. Kansas is going to be right there and in the mix. But the Big 12 is loaded, absolutely stacked, completely and utterly stacked this year in basketball. So that's fun. I just think it's good for Kansas. I've always felt like it's good for Kansas when the league is better. There were a lot of years that Kansas just rolled and the league sucked. And the league did Kansas no favors. They went off to the NCAA tournament and they'd be like 28-1 and just think it's going to be easy and we're a one seed and then somebody would jump up and get them because the league didn't prepare them. There were absolutely years that the Big 12 did not prepare Kansas for the tournament. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. And it wasn't the case last year. There's going to be enough heft in this league that Kansas will be ready. I can remember years where their non-conference schedule really was better than their conference schedule. It just was. I mean, there were some really bad teams in the Big 12 and nobody of any real ilk that could play with them. But I think there are teams that can play with them this year. So it should be a fun basketball year. And I do think it serves Kansas well. I think Kansas is much better served going into the NCAA tournament. Of course you want to win the league. Of course you want to win it. And maybe they will. Probably they will. But if you finish second or third and those other teams are elite, you know, there's like three teams in the top 12 out of the Big 12, you're ready. Any of you can go around the table in the tournament at that point. That'll be fun to watch. My eyes will be glued to it Tuesday night, Kansas and Michigan State. The head coach at Washington University football team, his name is Jimmy Lake. You probably didn't know that. They were playing Oregon this weekend when a Washington player cheap shotted an Oregon player at the sideline. It was cheap shot. And a melee was about to ensue between the teams. Jimmy Lake steps in. He's the head coach and grabs his player. Jimmy Lake is holding one of those coach play sheets. You know, the little play sheet that you hold? He grabs it and he swings at his player's helmet with the play sheet. I don't think his hand even touched the helmet. If it did, he would have hurt his hand. So he kind of slaps his helmet with the play sheet. And the University of Washington has suspended Jimmy Lake this week for the game with no pay for doing that. And what I would tell the University of Washington is maybe you should go to practice sometime and see what goes on there. These people, this virtue signaling, you're making some sort of a statement, Washington, that you're all cool and woke and this is out of bounds. You know what is not out of bounds in football? Taking the play sheet and scraping it across your player's helmet after he almost did a stupid thing that cost you a football game and let down all of his teammates. It's coaching. It's part of the deal. At no point was the player in danger. This is absurd. I'm not even sure the play sheet scraped across the face mask of his helmet. What they didn't like was that he swung at him, I guess. This is just ridiculous. This is absurd. This is too far. It's too far, it's too soft, and it's too shallow. There's no substance to this decision. There is no basis for suspending him for a game and not paying him. Maybe you just want to save the money. I don't know what you're doing. You think it makes you look good to your liberal friends that you did something to this guy because he took a swipe with a piece of paper at a player wearing a helmet that flies around 100 miles an hour and crashes into other players? This is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. Hey, if this is a basketball player with no helmet on and a coach takes a clipboard and whacks him in the face with it, I got it. I'm with you. I'm there. The guy's helmet was on. It's a piece of paper. It's a play sheet. It's a laminated play sheet. Oh, my God. This is so bad. So, so bad. I would strongly encourage the folks at Washington University to go to practice and check that out. Back9development.com is a great sponsor of KKHI. We certainly appreciate TJ and his team at Back9 with custom homes, commercial properties, and room additions online at back9development.com. Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch in Overland Park. Online at joslynsjewelry.com. Non-commissioned sales reps, no pressure. And the best jewelry at the best price. Their repairs there, if you have some broken jewelry of any kind, typically 50% less than the corporate jewelers. Joslyn's is the jeweler you'll recommend to your friends and family. Fry Orthodontics with 12 locations in Kansas City for your convenience. Go see Dr. Jeremy and his team, where your smile is just the start. They run on time every time, and Invisalign is the same price as braces. It's perfect for adults. Give yourself a gift this holiday season. Give yourself that perfect smile at Fry Orthodontics. And of course, if you have some problem, we got rain coming here in the next couple days. You see some spots on the ceiling. Buck Roofing will come right out and find out why you have spots on your ceiling. Keep this number in your contacts for Buck Roofing. 913-384-2680. And you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. We finished with a personal note on Monday. Some of you will remember this, and some of you may not, from my days on radio, that near the end of my tenure at Sports Radio 810, my engineer and board operator was a wonderful woman named Krista Patrick. Krista came to work every day with a smile on her face. After Danny Klingscale was diagnosed with cancer, several months later, Krista called me and Danny and Todd into the office and said, "Danny's not the only one with cancer." Krista had metastatic breast cancer. She continued to work. She went through treatment. She had a smile on her face every day. Krista, of everyone I ever worked with in sports journalism, sports media, was the biggest fan I ever worked with. She was completely the opposite of me. I take the fandom out. I look at things as they are. I try to judge things as objectively as I can. Krista, I frustrated her to no end. We gave her the opportunity to have the position. She was looking for work, and I loved having her on board, and she was excellent at what she did. And she was the opposite of me. And what I remember about Krista was I would look at her through the glass, and I would start, the Royals would be on a 7-game losing streak, and I'd be ripping on Ned Yost or something, and the shoddy play, and they threw to the wrong cutoff man, and I'd be going through this litany of things the Royals were doing wrong, and I can't believe it. They're playing like little leaguers, and I can go out to Johnson County 3-2 and watch 8-year-olds play more fundamentally sound baseball than what I'm watching. And she would just hang her head, and she couldn't stand it. And she just couldn't take what I was saying, but it was part of the job. And then we hit commercial break, and she'd have that smile on her face, and everything was great, and she was an absolute pro, and she was so good at what she did. She would come to work with the Royals on a 5-game losing streak, just like my mom. Krista reminded me so much of my mom. She would come to work and say, "Doesn't matter, they're winning tonight." And I'd say, "Yeah, but so-and-so's pitching. He's got a Brian Anderson's pitching. He's got a 7.8 earned run average. Doesn't look good, you know, over here up against Greinke or something. Doesn't matter. They're winning tonight. It's going to turn around tonight." Optimistic, smiling. She loved to travel. She loved to fish. She was a tomboy. She loved wearing a ball cap. She loved the Jayhawks. She loved the Royals. She loved the Chiefs. Todd and I would frequently ask her, okay, she'd be really excited there'd be a game on sometimes during the day. The Royals would be winning, or KU would be playing in a tournament in Maui or something, would be on while the show was on. And she'd be watching and be so excited watching those games. And she'd get so wound up that KU was winning a basketball game in Maui or something. And I'd say, and we'd ask her all the time, "So would you rather KU win the national title, or the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, or the Royals win the World Series?" And she would always go, "You guys, stop that. I cannot pick between my teams. I cannot pick between my teams." And she had a love for life and a love for sports and a love for radio. And we shared that. We were different in a lot of ways, but my goodness, she brightened every day that we were around her. When she became sick later after much treatment and worked less, she still had a smile on her face. I mean, I know this isn't possible. There's no way this is possible. But if you had me say anything to eulogize Krista Patrick, it's just that she never had a bad day. She did so much for others, was so kind to other people, so generous. She always baked things and gave things away. And if somebody was sick or in the hospital, she came by. Such a caring, thoughtful person. It's not okay that she died. She was 51. It's not okay. It's not good. Breast cancer's horrible, and it got her. And she fought a valiant fight for almost 5 years. And she worked as an engineer for the Chiefs radio network on game days up until the Tennessee game a few weeks ago. And she called in a couple days before the game and says, "I don't think I can make it this week." And everybody kind of went, uh-oh. And that was the last she worked. She died a week later. She had a wonderful service yesterday that we attended, and she will be missed. She loved radio. She loved Kansas City sports. She loved people. She loved traveling. They had an unbelievable display that when you first walked into the chapel yesterday, there was a table of shot glasses of every place that she'd visited. And the sign said, "Please take one of these shot glasses if it reminds you of Krista, as a memento to put on a shelf and remember her by." So there were a couple of them there. One of them was Cape Cod. We did a nice thing for Krista a few years ago as a company. We gave her some time off and sent her to Boston to see the Royals and go to Cape Cod, and just said, "Go relax, take your mind off this stuff, go. Don't worry about a thing." So I saved that one there. When Todd Lebo arrived, I said, "That would be a good one for you." He was instrumental in getting her the tickets to the game. Mike Swanson had helped. The Royals helped. A lot of people were pitching in to give her this trip after she was diagnosed with cancer to just pick me up. A lot of people trying to do something nice. And so we did. I said, Todd, you should keep that one. And I took the one that said Cabo San Lucas. As you know, Cabo is a special place for me and Jessica, but this is going to have a special place on our shelf when people say, oh, when did you go to Cabo? I'm going to say, well, we've been several times, but that's not what this is. And it will give me the opportunity to tell people about Krista. She never told me she went to Cabo. I don't ever remember discussing that she had made a trip there. It must have been before I knew her. But she'll be missed, and she was surrounded by great family and friends, and the service was phenomenal. There was ticket after ticket after ticket to concerts and sporting events on the displays at her service. She lived. She loved to fish. She loved music. She loved going to games. And it was an awesome tribute and awesome display. It was worthy of who she was as a person. And she was taken way too young at age 51. Krista Patrick. You'll remember her. She spoke on the radio from time to time, gave some opinions. I liked having her on. I liked having a woman's voice and a woman's identity on the show. She was a complete and total pro in radio. Absolutely a better person. Krista Lynn Patrick, born September 8th, 1970, died October 22nd, 2021. We miss you.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.